This is University Forum. I'm Jean Moore, bringing you conversations with outstanding personalities on issues of interest to local, national, and international communities. Our topic today, glaucoma. What is it? Can it be cured? My guest is Dr. Nancy Wilson Crawford, a medical doctor with certification from the American Board of Ophthalmology since 1989. Dr. Crawford is licensed in Pennsylvania, and she is the director of the glaucoma service at the Moore Eye Institute in Springfield, Delaware County, Pennsylvania. Welcome to University Forum, Dr. Crawford.
Thanks so much for inviting me, Dr. Moore. It's a pleasure to be here.
We know that glaucoma is a serious eye condition, but what actually is it? What comprises glaucoma?
Glaucoma is basically a chronic progressive optic neuropathy. What that means is that the optic nerve over time becomes more and more damaged, and as that happens, blind spots can appear in your field of view. If this is left untreated, it can ultimately lead to blindness. Glaucoma is a very serious public health concern. It's a very common disease and a potentially blinding disease. And for the most part, it has no symptoms.
Mm. What causes it?
That's the million-dollar question, Dr. Moore. We're not sure of all the factors. We know that a number of factors contribute to glaucoma. One of them is elevated pressure in the eye. We know that people who have elevated pressure, every eye has a certain pressure, just like a tire or a ball would have a certain pressure at which it functions best. Mm-hmm. In the eye, if the pressure becomes elevated, we know that that increases the risk of the optic nerve becoming damaged. But we know that that's only part of the story, because not everyone with high pressure gets glaucoma. If you take mm-hmm. a room full of people with high pressure, only about 1 in 10 of those people will suffer optic nerve damage. So it's just one part of the puzzle. Genetics also plays a role, many different factors.
How would I know that I have it? What would I have to do to find out?
You would have to have a comprehensive ocular examination. There's no symptoms in the early stages, so you would not have any pain or redness or the normal things that bring patients into an eye doctor's office. Usually there's no change in your vision, and the blind spots which develop usually affect the peripheral vision or side vision first. So even then, it's not a tip-off. So there's no tip-offs in the early stages of the disease.
Because those symptoms could represent another kind of eye condition, especially the peripheral vision.
Well, you can get changes in your peripheral vision from a number of different diseases. Probably the most common of which would be diabetes and diabetic retinopathy. Glaucoma has very few symptoms or no symptoms in the early stages, and even when you get symptoms, if it's from glaucoma, it's usually very late in the disease, and it could be due to something else. Mm-hmm. So if you notice you're bumping into things or have had a car accident or are tripping on curbs, most definitely you should see your ophthalmologist to find out what that's due to.
Now, you could have good eye pressure and still have glaucoma. Is that possible?
Intraocular pressure is one factor, like I said. Mm-hmm. For instance, like I mentioned, if you have a group of people with high pressure, only a small portion of those people will suffer optic nerve damage. Conversely, if you take a group of people with known glaucoma, glaucoma implies damage to the optic nerve. So if you take a group of people with known damage or visual field defects, only about half of them at one point in time will have elevated intraocular pressure. The others mm-hmm. will have normal pressure or a normal mm-hmm. pressure reading. So pressure is only part of it. To really determine whether or not someone has glaucoma, pressure is one factor that the doctor will take into consideration. The appearance of the nerve or optic disc in the back of the eye is another consideration. And finally, tests of visual function, such as a visual field test, will also give some information.
So it's important to have a comprehensive kind of examination. And incidentally, there are ophthalmologists, there are opticians, there are optometrists. What's the difference?
Well, ophthalmologists are medical doctors. They have gone through college and medical school and have then studied an additional 3 years or more to concentrate on diseases of the eye.
So if I go just to get some glasses fitted and have no knowledge of my eyes, it really is important for me to get back to somebody who could tell me a lot more about what's going on behind the scenes, behind the eyes, so to speak.
Right. Well, optometrists are also optometrists do not go to medical school, mm-hmm. but they have 4 years of studying different aspects of the eye, and part of that training is diagnosis and treatment of some eye diseases. So optometrists would also be able to tell you whether or not you had glaucoma. They would not be and in the state of Pennsylvania, they would be able to treat medically, but they would not be able to treat with laser or with surgery.
I see. So, but when I go just to get eyeglasses, there's a lot of things when youngsters want to go, the teenagers might go, and they just want to go get some glasses and all that. They're not talking about somebody with that kind of background that they would be seeing necessarily.
Probably not.
Yeah. What are the differences as far as glaucoma itself? Are there just one kind of glaucoma? What makes glaucoma different in some people?
There are all types of glaucoma. Babies can be born with glaucoma, and we call it congenital glaucoma. There are two broad categories of glaucoma, open angle and closed angle. And when we talk about the silent sneak of sight or the high incidence and the public health problem, we're really talking about primary open angle glaucoma. That's the one that has no symptoms early on. And that's the one that's most common. It affects about 2 or 2.2 million Americans. It's a major public health concern.
Well, explain to us what that means when we talk about the open angle. Just give us a little run-through about that eye. I know we don't have television that they can see from us, but just describe what's happening back there that or up in front of the eye that which make a diagnosis.
Sure, I'd be happy to. In the front of the eye, there's a fluid called the aqueous humor, which is constantly turning over, constantly flushing the front part of the eye, if you will. And in normal eyes, it's produced and drained at the same rate. And the drain is located in the angle between the iris and the cornea. So there's an angle in the eye. If you actually look at a picture of it and you look where the iris meets the cornea, they come to an angle of anywhere between 30 to 45 degrees. And in that angle is a kind of a sieve-like structure called the trabecular meshwork, and that's where the fluid drains. Ultimately, it reaches the venous system and back to your heart. In glaucoma, for whatever reasons, and we don't know the exact reasons, there is an increased resistance to outflow through that through the trabecular meshwork. There's a clog, if you will. The drain gets clogged. And since there's no overflow, no way that the eye is a closed system, when the drain gets clogged and can't drain as efficiently as the aqueous is produced, the pressure goes up in the eye, almost like an overfilled tire.
Mm-hmm. Now, that fluid is different from tears, or is it?
It's very different. Tears are on the outside of your eye, and they're produced by the lacrimal gland right underneath your upper lid. The aqueous is inside your eye. You're not aware of that fluid.
So when you have dry eyes and have to take drops just for the tears, one should not assume that this has anything necessarily to do with glaucoma.
You're absolutely correct, and that's a great question. I often get asked that by patients in the office. There's that confusion between between tears and aqueous humor.
Now, what do you call the first one, open-ended or the wide?
Open angle.
Open angle glaucoma.
Right.
There's one kind of treatment, and with the narrow
right. The, another type of glaucoma occurs not because the drain gets clogged, but because the access to the drain becomes impeded. In certain eyes, particularly people who are very farsighted, or people whose lens increases with size, as the eye is a living structure and it changes with time. Particularly the lens, as it becomes a cataract, increases in size and takes up more space, if you will. The inside of the eye becomes more crowded, and the fluid doesn't have a free path to the drain. Mm-hmm. the iris can actually get pushed up against the cornea, and that angle between the iris and the cornea becomes very narrow and can even close so that the fluid can't even get to the drain. The drain may be perfectly open, but the fluid is prevented from getting to the drain because the angle becomes narrow. The treatment for that type of glaucoma is laser surgery. Basically, you take the laser and make a hole in the iris so that if the fluid can't reach the drain one way, it has a detour. It's like creating a detour.
Mm-hmm. How serious is it to have those kinds? Is that similar to a surgery, or is it different from surgery?
It's an office procedure. It still is a surgical procedure, but if for many doctors, they have the appropriate lasers in their office. So for many offices, it's an office procedure. The patient just comes in, takes about 2 minutes to do the procedure, and we watch the patient for about an hour to make sure that they tolerate the procedure well.
Now, lasering doing is a light, is it not?
Correct.
Oh, well, how do you control that light so it goes exactly where it needs to go?
Well, I don't know the exact focusing mechanisms, but I can tell you that it works. Lasers are used for all sorts of things. They can be used to burn tissue or coagulate tissue. They can be used to cut and vaporize material. For most of these little holes, we use the YAG laser, and that kind of vaporizes a small area of the tissue and creates a hole so the fluid can get through.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned something about millions of people related to the wide-angle glaucoma. What's the distribution? Is it more in some groups or races?
Well, it depends on age. Mm-hmm. First of all, the total people with glaucoma is now estimated to be, as I said, 2.2 million. And that number is expected to increase to 3 million by the year 2020 as the population gets older. The incidence of glaucoma is increased with each passing decade. As an example, the older you are, the higher your risk of getting glaucoma. For instance, in your 40s, you might have a risk of getting glaucoma, of having glaucoma of 1 to 2%, whereas in your 80s, that risk might be 10%. Mm-hmm. So certainly age is a factor. We know that race is a factor, that African Americans have a 6 to 8 times greater risk of getting glaucoma than a Caucasian of their equal age. Mm-hmm. So race is another factor. Family history is another factor. These are all the risk factors for getting glaucoma. Age is one, race is one, family history is one. As far as family history goes, if you have a sibling or an immediate family member with glaucoma, your risk of getting glaucoma is about 4 times that of someone who has no family history.
You're listening to University Forum with my guest, Dr. Nancy Crawford, an ophthalmologist with a specialty in the treatment of glaucoma, a very serious eye disease. Dr. Crawford, there are different kinds of things that can be done to help, but can glaucoma actually be cured at this point?
No. It's important to know that there is no cure for glaucoma yet, and the damage that occurs from glaucoma, the damage to the optic nerve, cannot be restored. If you have lost vision from glaucoma, it cannot be restored. What's gone is gone. The goal of treating glaucoma is to prevent further vision loss. So once you suffer damage, that damage stays with you. It doesn't get better.
Well, how can you prevent yourself from getting glaucoma, assuming these other risk factors may obtain? But is there anything that one can do? Has it anything to do with how they use their eyes or what we eat or anything of that sort?
I don't think there's any way to actually prevent getting glaucoma. Certainly, if you have any of those risk factors, you most definitely should have an eye examination at age 40 and every 1 to 2 years thereafter. So as far as I'm aware, there is no way of preventing glaucoma. If you've been diagnosed with glaucoma, there are certain things that you can do to help yourself. None of the alternative therapies have been shown to have the same effect as the medications that are available. So I would not say any of the things that I'm going to mention take the place of the care that your eye doctor can give you. But one thing that you can do is exercise. Exercise has been shown in certain groups to be able to lower your pressure by about 20%.
Is that right?
Yes, it's amazing. Actually, it's amazing. Exercise is wonderful not only for stress, depression, high blood pressure, and diabetes, but the benefits from exercise are actually finding to be helpful for people with glaucoma. Mm-hmm. Just a small amount of stationary bicycle or brisk walking, anywhere from 20 to 40 minutes, three or four times a day, can actually lower your pressure. Almost the same as a topical medication.
So it's almost like you're also lowering your blood pressure by not having too much stress on you.
Right.
By the way, you said, is high blood pressure one of the problems that you see in people with glaucoma?
There is a slight risk there, although it's not one of the major risk factors. Certainly anybody with cardiovascular disease, we believe there's some sort of link, but it's not one of the major risk factors.
Now, if one of the things that happens is as you get older, it's more prevalent. One wants to get older.
Almost definitely. I do.
but it does look as if in that age category, over 60, you're saying, that you probably would see more of an incidence of glaucoma.
Most definitely. Mm-hmm. But there are wonderful treatments available. When I started my career, the treatments for glaucoma involved drops that had to be taken three, four times a day that caused headaches, that blurred vision, caused eye redness and pain. The side effects were horrendous, and therefore the compliance was very poor. Over the past 10 years, several drops have been developed where they're taken once a day. And if in people who respond to them, one drop a day can lower your pressure 20 or 30%, which is what's usually recommended initially. So the topical medications that are now available are great.
Could you mention a few of them, or one or two?
By a brand name?
Mm-hmm.
Xylitan is probably the number one seller. It's used once a day in the evening, works best if used in the evening, and has very few side effects. Has very few systemic side effects, I should say. It doesn't affect your breathing or your heart rate. Mm-hmm. It has some localized side effects. It can actually change your eye color.
Is that right?
People with hazel eyes in particular, it can darken your eye color over time. It can also increase the thickness and length of your eyelashes. So prior to starting this medication, you certainly have to go over some of those potential risk factors, particularly if, for instance, you are going to start a patient with a blue or hazel eye on medication in just one eye, that might make a difference.
Oh, that would be interesting. Have you seen something like that, where one eye actually, a patient ends up with two different color eyes?
Most definitely. Oh. Yes, it does happen. What's more noticeable, I think, is the increased thickness and length of the lashes.
Does it make them longer or shorter?
Longer.
Oh, wow.
Longer, but not a natural longer. They look a little stiff, a little bit. They look a little unusual. They don't look entirely natural.
Mm-hmm. Are there other medications?
There are three medications that are in the group of prostaglandin analogs. They're in the same category, the Xylitan I mentioned, Travitan, and Lumigan. Mm-hmm. And they all work pretty much the same.
Now, do these medications control the progression of glaucoma, or what else would they do?
That's a very good question. All the treatments for glaucoma, the only modifiable risk factor that there is, the only thing that we know how to do is to lower pressure. Mm-hmm. We can't change an age, we can't change race, we can't change any of those other risk factors. The only thing that we know how to do is to lower pressure. And all the treatments, the topical drops, the laser treatments, or surgery, all of the treatments are aimed at lowering pressure. The two ways to do that are to decrease the amount of aqueous that's produced or increase the amount of aqueous that leaves the eye. And the prostaglandin analogs increase the amount of fluid that leaves the eye.
Well, what about vision now? At what point does the vision become weaker and weaker from glaucoma, even with the medications?
There's a whole continuum of glaucoma, and patients do not become symptomatic until pretty much the last stages, advanced disease or end-stage disease.
Mm-hmm. And that could happen even with medications and all?
Yes, it can. There's no question that despite adequate diagnosis and treatment that people still go blind from glaucoma. There are about 120,000 people blind from glaucoma in the United States today.
Now, the research must be going on with the Institute on Glaucoma and some other, the National Eye Institute, is there?
Right.
But is it so elusive, really, as a disease? It's very elusive to find either the cure or different kinds of controls?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the National Eye Institute. It's amazing how little we knew about glaucoma up until the last 10 years. We knew that pressure was important, but we didn't know how important. In fact, when I was a resident, there was an impression, a kind of a clinical intuition, that lowering pressure would be helpful in managing the disease, but there was no proof. So the National Eye Institute sponsored six different studies that helped us sort some of these issues out. Who do we treat, for instance? Do we treat everybody with high pressure? With one of the studies, we found out that no, we don't. It's more cost effective if we try and isolate those people that are at or a higher risk for developing glaucoma. Then, if someone has glaucoma, do we treat low pressure, high pressure? Do men or women respond better? Do we start early in the disease or late in the disease? And again, we have learned over the last 15 years that treatment helps at all stages of disease, at all levels of eye pressure, for all races and for both sexes.
Let's talk a little bit about pressure now, because we haven't really said how you actually find the pressure. And when I hear pressure, I always think of the blood pressure. We're talking about pressure of the eye. What do you use to determine that the pressure is high or low? How is that tested?
There are a number of instruments that we can use to test the pressure. One is a Goldman Applanation Tonometer. It's the little prism that's attached to the slit lamp. And when you go into the eye, to an eye doctor's office, they normally numb your eye and press this little prism against your eye. And what it does is it measures the amount of pressure that's needed to flatten a certain area of your cornea.
And it doesn't hurt, does it?
No, not if you have the numbing drop, and we try to remember to put that in.
Well, it's important for people to understand what pressure actually means, because you may not feel any of that pressure. You probably don't feel any pressure in the eye,
no,
based on what you've been saying. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about you, and before we go into that, you're at the Moore Institute. Would you like to give a phone number or a way in which that particular agency can be met?
Oh, sure. The Moore Eye Institute is a multi-subspecialty practice. We have doctors that work in not only glaucoma, but retinal disease, especially diabetic retinopathy. We have other subspecialties represented as well, including corneal and external disease, pediatrics, oculoplastic surgery, among others. And that number is 610-690-4900.
That's 610-690-4900. And actually, the Institute is located in Springfield?
We have four offices, but the main office is in Springfield.
All right. And that's in Delaware County, off of Springfield Road.
Correct.
Right. Now, you have an interesting background. Before you graduated from the Albert Einstein College of Medicine in the Bronx, New York, I say New York because I'm a New Yorker, you are a Phi Beta Kappa graduate of the State University of New York at Stony Brook, New York. Well, what stimulated your concentration in medicine, but in focusing specifically on the eyes?
Interesting. I think I decided to go into medicine because I knew I liked science. There's no question. I just loved the science studies, and I knew I liked to be around people. And when I was in college, I was a chemistry major and was actually thinking of going into chemistry graduate school, but realized I didn't like spending so much time in the laboratory away from people. So I changed my major and went into medical school. And I was fortunate enough to be assigned a world-renowned ophthalmologist as my advisor, and I'm sure he had a very strong influence.
That would be a reason to want to concentrate on that.
Yes.
You've done some studies in tropical areas, limited in Guatemala and
I was very adventurous when I was in college, and actually I had a girlfriend who was just as adventurous, and we decided we would use medical school to experience whatever we could. So we somehow were able to do a tropical medicine externship in Guatemala. Mm-hmm. We thought it would be fun. Actually, it turned out to be the hardest work I have ever done. Mm-hmm. We went down there, and we were stationed at the Bear Horse Medical Clinic in Chimaltenango, and the two of us pretty much ran a 69-bed hospital. Mm. So we worked very, very hard.
Mm. So you had some real experience in that, too. You went to London, I understand.
Yes, that was my advisor. He was able to get me to get me a position at the Moore Eye Institute to study as an extern.
Hmm. Well, you came back and they decided to come somehow to Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
What brought you to Philadelphia?
My husband. It's always the men,
happens,
right?
That happens.
It's always the men. My husband got a job at DuPont. In Wilmington, at the DuPont Experimental Station in Wilmington. And actually, I knew my husband since we were... My husband moved next door when I was 10 years old. So my husband and I knew each other for a number of years. It took us a while to warm up to one another. We didn't get married until our 30s. And we didn't start dating until I was a resident. And we had a long-distance relationship. But after my residency, we got married and... He was already at the experimental station in DuPont, so I moved right down.
That's wonderful. But from all of your experiences, what do you recommend to our listeners concerning dealing with glaucoma?
I would recommend to be aware of it, to certainly have a comprehensive eye examination if you have any of those risk factors, which are age, African-American heritage, any known family member with glaucoma.
Mm. Dr. Nancy Crawford, a recipient of the American Medical Association's Physician Recognition Award, a member of the American Academy of Ophthalmology, I thank you for this very enlightening discussion on glaucoma, a disease that deserves attention from all of our listeners, especially by going for regular eye examinations. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
This is Jean Moore leaving you with this thought. Your eyesight is a very special gift. Take care of it. Please send your comments or questions on University Forum programs to me by email at jemoore@wrti.org or call my voicemail 215-204-4376.